This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Having worked in Afghanistan, can you tell us a little bit about the experience you had there when you first went over after 9/11?
I had the real privilege of being one of the first aid workers into the northern part of Afghanistan after 9/11, actually, and went into the city of Kunduz with the first, this very small group of us working in a refugee camp just on the outskirts of that city. It was a truly remarkable time. You had deep and profound need, but you still had an opportunity to produce real change and do something great with the Afghan people. And over that time, I really fell in love with it.
And seeing what Afghanistan looked like at that time and now what it looks like in the last week, how are you feeling about the Taliban taking power?
I was just talking about that with some of my team members who, like me, have spent many years in Afghanistan. It's a question at the center of a lot of the work that we do, which is you know, your job in this world is to do what's right and to do what's good and to do what you think Jesus would do. And Afghanistan's a great example of that. You pour your life into a place and you keep pouring your life into a place, and it has its ups and downs. And I don't say that glibly, because some of the downs are very deep. What you can do is you remain committed to a place. And we were committed there 20 years ago as an organization, and I was personally, and we remain committed to the Afghan people. If you're a family and you're trying to bring up children, you just wake up every day and you deal with the things that you have in front of you. And you need organizations like ours to be there helping you get through all of that stuff. So we remain committed to getting kids educated and to having families have a life where they have well-being and they have clean water and they have health care. And those things are still possible. And those things will still, we still need to work there. And I don't actually see those things stopping. And so we remain committed.
How has it impacted the motivation or the hopefulness of your teams, having done that work, to then see the power shift that has happened in the last couple of days?
So you choose the hopeful path and you just say, well, now we're going to renegotiate with a new group of people about how we have space and what freedom do we have to do that. And, you know, in the end, all people love their children. All people, you know, they're committed to their communities. They're committed to their future. You just sometimes have to find new ways to work with new groups of people.
What do you think that's going to look like for the World Vision teams?
You know, in the end, I think that our work's going to be very similar to the work that it's been. You know, in a place like Afghanistan, you know, the battle that we fight and the battle that we were fighting this year is actually hunger. You know, Afghanistan is faced with COVID in the same way that we all are. But when they shut down economic activity, there's very little for people to do. There's very little way for people to generate money. And so now you sort of have this bitter harvest of COVID, which is hunger.
Mm.
It's food insecurity. Yep. But families now, I mean, what we're worried about at World Vision is that the price of COVID, the sort of mortality and morbidity produced by COVID, will be more pronounced because of hunger than because of the virus itself. Mm. And so you have millions of people in Afghanistan right now who are hungry. That as a result of COVID and their ongoing insecurity and their ongoing fragility. And so what we're desperate to make sure we can keep doing is responding to that. We've already worked with 500,000 children and families on this issue of hunger and food security, making sure they've got enough to eat. Mm. We need to keep being able to do that. That's what our focus is.
Will the Taliban being in power put more pressure on that or make your job doing that harder?
We hope not.
Mm.
We hope not.
I mean, I have heard people say that some of the humanitarian gains that organizations like yourself and so many others around the world have made in the last 20 years, that some of those will be lost. Do you agree with that sentiment?
I don't know yet. I don't. And again, I'm not trying to be glib here. We have to meet these guys, and we have to say, you know, how do we work together for the benefit of the families and communities in your community? And that's what we're committed to. And we're going to start with a position of belief in that and negotiate and navigate our way into that. It's not meant to be, you know, in a sense, It's the World Vision works in the toughest places on Earth, in the most fragile places on Earth, and places where there's conflict and difficulties. That's the nature of our work.
Mm.
It's, you know, like an aircraft engineer with gravity. You can't complain about gravity. Your job is to overcome it and to do something good. And that's what we do. And we wake up this morning and our team is doing that.
What response would you like to see from international governments?
I hope, just because they may have pulled out of that country in military terms, and they may have, that they must still remain engaged in humanitarian ways, that the Afghan people still remain. Mm. They still need what they need. Yep. And so, and there are organizations like World Vision staying there, committed on the ground. So, you know, we can deliver aid now, today. And so let's not forget them. Let's not turn our backs on them, and let's stay the course when it comes to humanitarian and development assistance.
When you talk to your teams on the ground and the local Afghanis on the ground, are they viewing this takeover as the fault of America or the fault of the West? What is their perspective?
We just don't have those conversations. Our conversations are focused on what can we do today with the people that are around us. That's just the way we see the world. Mm. Yeah, we don't. We leave those conversations to fancier people than us. Our job is to find ways to help families. That's what we do. And our conversations are around that. And, yeah.
Yeah, so it just, I love hearing how hopeful and how positive you do seem to sound looking toward the future. Is that kind of an intentional choice for you, or is that where you're genuinely at right now?
It's both of those things. You know what? It's one of the most, I've been doing this work for a long time, and I will say, the really sort of shocking thing that I've learned, Laura, is that both of those things are true. You know, if you think that the world is scarce and that there's not enough, and if you think that the people are bad and that they want ill will for you and for others, and if you think in the face of all of that, you're powerless and there's nothing you can do, the amazing thing is that life becomes like that. The world does become small and people do seem bad and you seem powerless. But what I've also learned, working in places like Afghanistan, working in places like Congo, Somalia, El Salvador, Colombia, East Timor, working in the biggest refugee camps in the world, what I've learned is this, that if you walk into those places thinking there is enough, actually, that the world is better than we think, and that the people that surround us, that they actually, they want to be good, and if we can unleash that by believing it, mm-hmm. and that together then as a group of people, we can do things that would astound us. You know, first time I went into Afghanistan, I flew in there, I had to get smuggled across the border with $10,000 in a boot. And yet with that, and with the people that I found on the ground, we managed to do remarkable things. So I've noticed that I'm optimistic because I believe in people. I believe the world is better than we think. I think opportunity is always there to do good. And what I've noticed is the world always responds that way. So, yes, I'm optimistic because I choose to be. And two, I'm optimistic because I know we'll find a way, and we'll find a way to do good for kids.
Mm, you are an absolute inspiration, Daniel, and I know there's a lot of Australians listening right now who look on at what's happening with a sense of maybe despondency or uncertainty of how they can help, what they should do. What would you say to them? How can we help World Vision right now?
Well, you can be part of the World Vision family. I mean, a lot of Australians already are. You're probably already sponsoring a child with us, or you probably did a 40-hour family, or you're doing it right now, actually. Mm. But we love donations. They're key to us. You know, we want to be able to do this work, and our lifeblood is the support that we get from the Australian people. We always rely on the generosity of Australians to do this. And I would just say, sometimes people feel bad because they listen to the radio, they watch the TV, and they think, there's nothing I can do, and I'm just sitting here like a lump, and, you know, what can, you know, who am I? But then I would just say, it's okay. World Vision's there. Yeah. It's okay. Like, Australians have kept World Vision going for decades, so you should expect us to be there, right? That's the job that we have. You know, your job may be to keep the coffee shop going, right, or to keep the electricity going, or whatever. We all have jobs to do. Our job in Australia is to be in Afghanistan when the Australian people want us to be. And so don't worry, we're there. You don't have to be despondent, and just join with us and we can do something good.
And before we wrap it up, Daniel, I just wonder, I mean, there's so many families obviously being affected in Afghanistan right now. From your experience being there, are there any families that have stood out to you or that you think really represent the spirit of the Afghanistan people and the kind of people that our support will actually be helping?
Oh, I remember when I went in, it was December, January 2001, 2002, and we were trying to open little schools in a big refugee camp. And we had these 10, we had this group of teachers, and it was snowing and it was blizzarding, and we were about to go to this refugee camp, and we weren't sure what was going to happen, and we thought we might be overwhelmed by kids. And it literally, as I was standing there, the snow was sideways. It was blizzarding so much. And I asked, there was like actually 20 teachers, and I just said to them, look, guys, we're about to go to this camp. It's blizzard. It's freezing. And I can't promise you what will happen when we get there and how, but, you know, we want to find kids and do something for them. Are you willing to do it? And they all shouted, like, as one, of course we are. What are you talking about? Like, they're our kids. Yeah. Mm. So, you know, all you ever do in places like this is you help the people that are there who already want to do things. You know, we don't create energy. We don't create love in these countries. It already exists. What we do is just go in and help and just come alongside.
Well, Daniel, thank you so much for the work that you have been doing and that World Vision are doing right now and your time today. We really appreciate it.
But thank you, Laura. Thanks for shining a light.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.